edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Stan Deo from standeo.com back with us. I'm glad he's feeling better. It's good to have Stan Deo on. And of course, just to let everyone know, and I just want to point this out, someone ordered a whole bunch of cases of Dare to Prepare cleaning out their supply. That's at standeo.com. And no, you know, think about that for a moment. The theme basically has been preparation. So they only have a handful of books, six, eight books right now, eight books left as of that update, and I'm not even sure if that's accurate. So if you want a copy of Dare to Prepare, which is my favorite preparation encyclopedia, do it now. They only have eight left. They'll be getting more in January, but hey, you snooze, you lose. And that to me, that's a testament of the value and of the comprehensive nature of Dare to Prepare. And of course, Prophetic Perils as well in Stan's book, Cosmic Conspiracy. But go to standeo.com for all of that. Stan, thanks for hopping on board this Christmas week.
Sorry I missed you guys last week. I was just, in a world of hurt. Not much better today, but they've given me medicine at the doctor today, so we'll see how it goes. Man.
Well, thanks for, thanks for playing injured. Still showing up injured or hurt. So we appreciate that.
Hey, the game's got to go on.
Yeah, it does. And it's just to me, this has been like a weird week and a weird, I don't know, just a different kind of a day. But anyway,
there's a strange feeling in the air. Just out there with people talking to them, and I don't know what it is. I think it's probably whatever it is a delight to George Soros, if you get my drift.
I do. And that pretty much says it all, summarizes it all. Yeah, it's just been one of those days. And I was telling Eric, the tech here, before you came on during the break, I said, it's just been a strange, odd day. It has an odd feel to it. I can't put my finger on it, but it's just strange. And I've had interaction with a whole bunch of people today, and it's just something not, there's just something not right, and I don't know what it is. But anyway, moving on.
Well, I'll tell you, I looked at the Google News, Google probably says it all, but anyway, of course their bent is certainly not toward Mr. Trump.
Right.
And they have a whole section of news dedicated today on Google News to Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the titles on it, this tells you. I mean, Alec Baldwin, of course, hates Donald Trump, and so he's playing him in some kind of a, Saturday Night Live or variety thing or something. I don't know, but it's not going to be good. And then listen to these titles of the articles in the last 15 hours that have come up on Google about Trump: the delegitimization of Donald Trump, the Prince of Lies, Donald Trump's contradictory remarks about violence reflect his power to distort reality. Another title of it, this is Washington Post. In Donald Trump's Washington, corruption will be utterly shameless.
Wow.
Time Magazine, beware the tricks and traps of Donald Trump, news manipulator-in-chief. Wall Street Journal, Russian ambassador assassination, Berlin truck attack points to Donald Trump's challenges.
Stan, and for those people who don't know, a couple of things. I want to just mention this because, kind of do some of the lifting here as well, tonight. But Google is the parent company of a company called Alphabet. And Alphabet owns a whole bunch of companies. But when you look at what Google is and what is taking place, and Stan, this is something that, for example, you mentioned the series of headlines.
Doug?
Yeah, go ahead.
Is something happening there? You're fading out.
Can
you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine, brother.
Okay, I guess maybe we're talking off mic or something. Go on.
All right. Okay, yeah, and I apologize if I was. But what's taking place here with the news, and I've noticed this with Google in particular, if you have a headline, for example, let's say of a story that you wrote or an article that you've written, and you place it on your website, Google depending on the content, will push that down in the search results. So far, you won't be able to find it. It might be on the fourth or fifth page, even though you're searching the exact title of the article, and that's by design. And of course, you've got the fact that 62% of adults today get their news via social media. You've got, of course, the war against the so-called fake news on social media. So three-quarters of the population, two-thirds of the population, they are being affected by the censorship by Google. And we're seeing the Hegelian dialectic employed. We're seeing this, we're seeing all of this. So the headlines that you wrote, that you referenced, and by the way, the Washington Post, is responsible, or claims that Russia, Russian propaganda effort was, helped spread the fake news during the election. And in the Washington Post, obviously, as you mentioned earlier, citing those headlines, it should be known that is, the whole thing's Orwellian. I guess I'll just stop there. I guess people understand. People understand, and they legitimize that prop or not website to Washington Post. So yeah. Anyway, you're right. So what do we do about this, Dan? I mean, my gosh, and this happened so quickly.
Well, look, I do hope that Mr. Trump and his administration he's appointing get a fair shake. With the appointees he's made and with himself, that's a team. But even with just that core team, if they don't get rid or clear out a lot of the old guard in the infrastructure, the departments that do all the work for the government, he's going to be pushing a big load uphill because they're going to resist him at every turn. They've already made that clear in the press. It's just we need to get him past the swearing in, the inauguration in January. Get him past that. I'll take a deep breath, a sigh of relief when that happens anyway. But then it remains to be seen as to how the left wing is going to impede what Mr. Trump has promised to do and is trying to do, appears.
We made it through we made it through Monday with the Electoral College. We only had four faithless electors or six or whatever. It made no difference anyway. So now we've got, of course, Congress coming back after the first, and then we have the inauguration. Stan, how do you see the inauguration playing out? Are you concerned about that?
Yeah. I hope they, guard him well, protect him from a lot of things that could happen. With what Obama's doing now, he is making these last-ditch crazy actions, pardoning hundreds of people in the prisons, banning oil drilling and a couple million acres of Atlantic and Arctic oceans, impeding our use of the resource that we need to make our own country independent of depending on the Middle East oil or anybody else. He's rushing out what they call 11th hour regulations targeting the coal industry, which is already under enough stress as it is, but adding extra regulations that are crushing the coal industry will crush them. I don't know if Mr. Trump can, turn that around. I don't know how Obama's doing it or what he hopes to do to do some of the stuff that could be reversed as soon as Trump gets in office. It's crazy. And in the Middle East, of course, we've got something brewing over there, over Syria, and over Turkey as well. But the whole Middle East is aflame at the moment. And I've been talking with you about this probably for 6 or 7 months. What happens if all their attempts to stop the Trump movement in this country, what if all their attempts to stop that fail, pass the election, pass the Electoral College, what do they have left other than obstinance? Well, they could keep Obama in power in times of a worldwide and certainly a national crisis in the event of the apparent start of World War III in the Middle East. You wouldn't want to be changing into a new administration when you've got bombs dropping, would you?
No, not at all. People have said, well, that's not constitutional, or it's not consistent with our Constitution. Transfer of power in wartime really is, it should go off and be because that's the way our Constitution is set up, a dignified and a smooth transition of power. But since when has this regime really exhibited any deference or any respect for the Constitution of the United States?
Never.
Exactly. I thought of you when I saw the assassination of the Russian ambassador in Turkey. And I don't know, every time I hear Turkey, I think of Stan Dale, okay, because of your work on the Antichrist, shall we say, or, you know,
right,
looking at in that direction. What did you think when you saw that? I'm just curious. Any?
Well, a couple of thoughts came pretty quickly. One, we know that Erdogan, the prime minister, whatever, of Turkey, he calls himself, he's now almost a despot, but anyway, he's been shooting, killing, you know, a lot of his own people as traitors or whatever, resistance to his change, and now he's made Russia mad. Well, he's allowed some kind of a terrorist attack to do this, or at least that's what the news is saying. My concern was, okay, is Erdogan going to be assassinated by Russia because they don't like him? Are his own people going to turn on him, you know, a military junta form and throw him out? Will his, I forget the guy's name, it's Suleiman, like Solomon, is his head of the interior or something like that? He has the name Solomon. He's there at Turkey where, you know, the writings in the New Testament, the Revelation of John, speak about, you know, the seat of Satan, you know, and the head of the Euphrates and all that kind of stuff. Turkey is a focal point in the end times prophecies. So if it's not Erdogan, if he gets, deposed or whatever they do to get rid of him over there, and this other guy, Suleiman, takes over, then it could be that a new Solomon will arise and will unify Turkey and the Muslim faith. And before Erdogan came along, the Muslim attitude, the behavioral code, women didn't have to wear the face covering or the burqa. They could drive and all kinds of stuff like that. But then when Erdogan came in, he made it so super religious, they go back and putting the brakes on, you know, the housewives and fiancés and that kind of stuff. And that's not good. When you put pressure on the ladies of the house, for whatever reason, you're going to get blowback. And so I'm wondering if they're telling their men, okay, this guy's got to go. So, yes, I tossed all kinds of ideas back and forth in a split second there, trying to figure out what does this mean.
Do you think, okay, the assassination, because I don't, well, looking at this assassination, this to me was not a crime or a murder of opportunity. In other words, this was not a drive-by, so to speak, with respect to the shooting of the Russian ambassador in Ankara. This was planned out, thought out, in my view anyway.
Yeah.
So and then I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, okay, if that's the case, what's the motive behind this? And who, first of all, what's the motive and who would be behind it? It'd have to be tied together, obviously. And I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, okay, you had Turkey shoot down a Russian aircraft. And you've had Obama that's just been poking and poking and poking Putin. And then you've got this false narrative for the most part about, well, the false narrative about Russian propaganda shaping and infiltrating our news and also affecting our elections. It seems that, man, it just seems like we, the West, not just the United States, but the West, Israel, France, other countries, are just pushing for a war in with Russia and in the Middle East. And I think that this moment yesterday, that assassination, could have played a part, or could be a component of this. Or am I overthinking this, or is that just...
No, look, I'll tell you what. Nowadays, things are going to happen real quick when we have a war. It won't be like months of, you know, prolonged, well, you might have a prolonged, you know, months or years of war, maybe two or three, but that'll be toward the tribulation period, toward the last half probably. But the initial flashbangs that go off are going to be so rapid fire, and it's like a gunfight between two guys. You know, it might last 15 seconds, and that's it. One of them's dead. And this is the kind of feeling I'm getting from the whole Middle East situation and the European situation. There's something else going on. One of your listeners, just say Levi, you know who you are, Levi. He and I have been corresponding by email over a number of things. He put together news articles in order, timeline, of the politicians, the religious leaders, astronauts, all kinds of people in the last year, this year, going down to Antarctica. What's going on down there? Why is the Pope going down there?
Yeah. Well, why, Stan? Why? I'm hoping you can answer, or at least throw some ideas.
I told Levi on the website today, I said, I'm still investigating this, you know, there's more to this than meets the eye. And there's been articles posted saying it was a part of the new financial order, and they were dividing up, redividing up Antarctica, but there's also rumor of a secret city that's been seen by NASA through the ice in Antarctica, an ancient city that's buried there.
Right, on your show notes page, you have that. They're not putting an ATM down there. Okay, I just want to make that clear. They're not putting an ATM down there. So, okay, all right.
There's something horribly amiss in the whole world at the moment. It might be we're approaching the moment I've been forecasting for a long time, and that is multiple crisis curves enveloping the people of Earth to the point that they will accept a solution to Earth by our elder brothers from space, the bad guys really, but posing as angels of light. And I think that might be what's happening down in Antarctica, because they may be down there meeting with these beings that are obviously part of Satan's crew, but the great deception is about to just open up, and disclosure, quotes, is about to happen.
And I agree, and there's been so much research done with Antarctica and the Nazis and all of this. And of course, I mean, we could take hours, if not days, talking about this, but I do believe that there's something indeed critical about this area. Well, period.
Well, I mean, like, yeah, you could make the argument that John Kerry went down to, you know, to emphasize his global warming concerns and that kind of junk. You know, why did it now in the year that Obama went down there, and the year that Buzz Aldrin went and got sick and had to be taken away? I mean, you know, it smells. There's something going on down there. Look at image 4 on the show images page.
All right.
You can click to the article about it, but just click on the picture and see that first. The sea ice extent, which is like in the sea floating, not over land, it's the ice at the South Pole and the ice at the North Pole.
Right.
These graphs show from 1978 to 2015. What is weird is the South Pole, Antarctica, what we're talking about, its ice was actually gaining on a slow curve from 1978 to 2014, but then all of a sudden, this 2015 going into 2016, the sea ice around the Antarctic just fell off a cliff. There was like, you know, gosh, instead of being million square miles of about, let's say, 16 million square miles of sea ice floating around the South Pole down there. This is off the land mass, but it's floating on the shelves. We're now down to about 14.6. We've lost several million square miles of ice in the space of a year. So then you go over to the next graph there. North Pole ice coverage continues its dramatic slide. Well, the North Pole, you and I both talked about this, has been warming. And the cooling at the South Pole would increase the ice, you know, on land and around the seacoast there. But in the North Pole, it's been a steady curve down. You can see that blue line that's the trend curve, and it shows that it drops from about 12 million square miles in 1978 to, again, a dramatic slide this year, 2015-2016, to about 9 million square miles. Well, that's 3 million square miles lost at the North Pole, but it's been doing it on a regular basis, which, you know, I linked originally when we talked about it to the hypothesis I've formed about the interior of the planet. Periodically the heat leaking out the North Pole and the South Pole. Well, I had to revise that when I saw the South Pole was gaining ice, North Pole was losing it, because that would indicate that there's a thermoelectric thing going on inside the core of the planet, where when electrons flow in a direction in a conductor like the Earth inside, it's cooling one pole, the South Pole, and as it comes, the electrons come out through the North Pole, they heat it. And we're seeing this now. I'm still wrestling with the problem of why we would have a current flow from the South Pole into the atmosphere of the crust of the Earth up to the North Pole. Why would we have that one DC, you know, direct current flow? I don't know, but that's what it looks like. And you know, it's a number of things. It's global warming that they're touting is human made. That's rubbish. But the planet is getting warmer in certain respects, and so are other planets in the solar system. It's financial crisis. You know, everything hanging on a thread at the moment. It's political instability in the world because of the U.S. elections here and what America's going to do. You know, in the new government there in the White House and a new administration, and you know the. Threat of nuclear war in the Middle East. All these things, when you put them together, they're forming that perfect storm I've been forecasting, which is going to make the people of Earth cry out for someone to help them save the planet and themselves, obviously. And all these things seem to just add together to that.
And I like the way that you summarize that or put all of that together, because, you know, it's not going to be necessarily, at least I don't believe it'll be one thing. It'll be a combination of things, a totality, an aggregate of things that will cause, in at least in my view, Stan, it would have to be more than one thing and more than one severe event, not just a series of events, but a number of very serious events to bring about the people to cry for, call for this one person, and accept this one person in particular, Christians too, and the delusion is going to have to be strong and great. So, interesting way that you put that, and I think that people really need to understand the magnitude of what you just said.
One of the curves I forgot was a crisis of faith.
Yes,
you know, various religions, major religions, their followers are, you know, questioning and challenging and wanting change. This is, you know, like chaos in the whole planet and the religious side of things as well. Somebody wanting order.
Well, yeah, we're certainly being set up, at least in my view, for the big event ultimately to wrap things up, you know, at least start to end the age on the Earth. But you know, just going back to Image 4, just momentarily.
Mm-hmm.
That's one hell of a drop. I mean,
that's astounding. I mean, you don't have to be a mathematician. You look at the picture and you say, whoops, something happened. Did the pen slip or what? You know?
Well, yeah. And the x-axis is in millions of kilometers, right? I just want to make sure I read that right.
Yeah,
million square kilometers.
Sorry, the y-axis.
Yeah.
That's the
y-axis.
Yeah,
sorry,
yeah, it's in million square kilometers. We're talking large amounts there. In fact, if I do a quick sum here, 14.6, we were up to the median, let's say, of 16.5 median. 14.6. Yeah, we're looking at a 13% dive in the last year, 13% loss of ice all of a sudden at the South Pole.
We're about a minute before the bottom of the hour break, but has anyone dared to proffer an explanation for that, or is that just,
Oh, I've read some papers, and as usual, in the scientific community, like everything else, you have the pros and cons of, you know, this idea, that idea, what's causing it. Nothing right. that I've read really satisfies, because looking at these graphs, we know that there was a buildup of float ice, you know, off the coast of Antarctica, South Pole. And for that to drop suddenly, that quickly, it's not just calving. There's something else going on that would make that ice disappear, which indicates a warming of the offshore water as well as just calving, breaking off the chunks. And, of course, if it calves over the water where it's been floating anyway, it's still sea ice. What they're worrying about at the moment, that sea, it was one big piece. It was calving. I think it's completed now. They were concerned because it was a block, a dam, against the ice that was on land at the South Pole, and they're fearing that it might start like a slow avalanche of glaciers sliding off the land into the sea. And when that happens, your coastal properties all over the world are going to get reevaluated real quick.
Indeed. Yeah. Nicely stated. Folks, Stan Deo is our guest. StanDeo.com. He has a website. About 6 books, Dare to Prepare, left. Ordered now. Going to be right back. Give us 3 minutes. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Stan Deo is our guest, StanDeo.com, his website. And, of course, when we talk about, when we have Stan on, we reference show images, the show images page, which is right off StanDeo.com. And I would like to take this opportunity, if I may, to wish Stan and Holly Deo a very Merry Christmas and a very safe and prosperous New Year from all of us here at the Hagman and Hagman Report. And I certainly hope that each and every one of you, because this is going to be the last time that we're going to talk on air before the holidays, before Christmas, and those who celebrate Christmas, certainly take a moment and wish Stan and Holly both and their two kids when I say kids, I'm talking about their dogs.
Four-legged kids.
That's right. A very, very Merry Christmas. We think so much of both Stan and Holly Deo. And, I don't want to get weepy, but, I'm very serious. We do respect you and Holly so very much. You folks are classy, and you've got, not just classy, but informative and inspirational, and an inspiration to all of us. And, we just want to say thank you from the bottom of our hearts for being a fixture on Tuesday nights.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And although Holly's upstairs, I will wish you and Joe and your families and your listeners as well a very Merry Christmas as well.
Well, thank you.
And
thank you.
In my dad's home, dad's mom was Jewish. And so, of course, dad was Jewish. But... they never practiced much, and mom was a Baptist, Southern Baptist, so we had Christmas. And we never did Hanukkah, but on Friday nights, Dad would go over to Saul's place, Solomon's place, anyway, who made, it was a delicatessen, and so we called Friday night, which is, you know, the beginning of Sabbath, Jewish Sabbath, we call that, my brothers and I, stinky food night.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah. Christmas is real. It was real at our place. And, Holly and I have been just making it a point when we're out, you know, going to the cleaners or going to the store and dealing with tradespeople or whatever, wishing them, you know, each a Merry Christmas. And not one of them has failed to return Merry Christmas back to us. You know, it's
That's
like
great.
A relief. They're saying, "Oh, can we say that? Yes, let's do it." That's the feeling I'm getting.
Yeah, in some respects, that is, I agree with that. I've actually exchanged Christmas greetings with many people who are quick to say Merry Christmas back, whereas before there seemed to be some hesitance there. They would also say Happy Holidays or same to you, but now it's different, and maybe that's just a mere psychological. Folks, I understand that it's unlikely, and I don't certainly personally believe that our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ was born on the 25th of December, but to
It's the day we celebrate it. We're not sure about the actual date.
Right. So, I mean, to me, if you're that purist, then okay, then whatever. But all right, Stan. But again, thank you from the bottom of our hearts for everything you and Holly do and have done. And you've really, your books, your book and Holly's book, what a lifetime of work, from Prophetic Barrels to Dare to Prepare to Prudent Places. Wow.
You know, I'm still trying to, because of all the interruptions to my work, I'm still trying to finish the volume 2 of the Vindicator Scrolls, which is a really detailed location of the Garden of Eden and the Land of Eden and the Atlantis and how it fit in with Genesis 6 in the Bible, and of what caused the flood, or the principal cause of it was, you know, this large asteroid that hit the Earth. In fact, there were two or three more I found out than the one I mentioned in the lectures, but I just can't seem to get the time carved out of the day. To start with, I get up late these days because I sleep in. Getting up in the morning is very painful, but I waste several hours getting up, and then I got chores to do here and then business stuff, and toward evening you get tired and you can't write as well like I used to in the evenings. But I am trying to get that book out. It's the last one that we'll probably do if I can get it finished and depressed this in the next few months. But it is important, I think, to validate the authority and the truthfulness of the Bible, and to know that there is a Garden of Eden, to know that there is a Land of Eden that was to the west of it, and to know what mechanisms God used to cause the flood, cause the hot water to spring up from the fractured crust of the earth. The crossbreeding between fallen ones, fallen angels, if you wish. They came down on Mount Hermon. There were about 300 of them reported, I think. 200 or 300 anyway. And they came down, and they were the sons of God, the fallen ones, who mated with humans coming out of Tanzania, out of the Garden of Eden area, into Saudi Arabia, and that was Atlantis. And the reason I'm harking back to that at the moment is, in that image 12 on the show image page, could there be a secret city under Antarctica? If you click on the text and read the article, they're talking, it might be the legendary Atlantis, where half human, half gods lived. And I'm wondering if, Satan's new lot of fallen ones that have come down and been abducting people, if they're taking them down there and crossbreeding, and they've got a whole society down under the South Pole somewhere, of a new Atlantis forming. It's a crazy thought, I know, but I writing this book is taking me down rabbit holes that are amazing.
I can only imagine. I can only imagine, as you research this, because to me, a lot of this I'll just perform these or ask you these in the form of questions.
What a novel idea!
Yeah. There are a lot of myths, I know, that surround the South Pole. Now, let me ask you this. Is there a no-fly zone in the South Pole? Do you know that offhand or in your research?
No, I don't know that offhand.
Okay, all right. I was just curious.
Check that.
All right. Now, okay. So if... I mean, there's got to be something going on at the South Pole that there's just going to be something going on that we're not being told. I mean, a moron would have to accept that, I believe, because you don't have Kerry going down there and everyone else going down there and then having... I mean, there's something definitely taking place, obviously. What a brilliant statement, by the way. Yeah.
say?
Yeah.
What did you say?
No, I just said, what a brilliant statement. There has to be something going on down there. I mean, that's an in-depth statement. But but you're right. Wouldn't it be something, though, if there was some sort of a hybrid program, I guess?
Well, I know there were rumors when I worked for Teller's Group, down in the southern part of Australia. There were rumors about our facility down at Antarctica, but I wasn't sure whether it was part of McMurdo and further inland from there or what. But because the Teller's Group, and the Gravity Research and everything else, they were linked to the critters, the little gray and the tall gray and the humanoid type of beings. Now, as far as I know, I never met any of them personally, but they were rumors of them and papers on them and floating around inside the organization. What, 1971, 72, and probably before that, but that was when I was in the program. But that tells me that, it's another bit of smoke from what's happening down there at the South Pole, and it's been happening since the end of World War II, I think. Certainly the Germans, I know they were down there. There's no question about Neuschwabenland being a part of a German base. But where they went after that, with the technology they had, and they had help from somebody doing it because they were massive jumps in understanding and technology.
That's always intrigued me with the Industrial Revolution, how in the span of a century we could go from a horse and buggy essentially to a jet, to landing on the moon. Obviously it's a little bit more than a century there, but the explosion of technology, and we've spoken about this before. What, everyone suddenly gets smart all of a sudden, intelligent all of a sudden, and have new ideas, or is there something else going on? And I think that always intrigued me.
Well, I'm not going to deny there's probably something else going on, but here are some factors to look at in bacterial, colony growth. You start out with one or two bacteria, and then you get a few more, and then you click, and then they click, and then you got like a chain reaction. You had two, then you got four, then you got eight, then you got 16, 32, bang, bang, bang. Now, as information knowledge becomes available across the whole human culture, like a colony of bacteria, ideas exchange back and forth rapidly. And that does explain, since the computer revolution in the 60s, why it's been an exponential development of technology all over the place from that point. But before that point, it was slow because communication on the Earth and travel was much slower. The ship and the odd airplane, after World War One, it started to pick up. But it's a normal chain reaction once you have communication between the elements of a colony. It's like the old ping pong ball test they did. They put a ping pong ball on a mouse trap, the old type that had a snap spring, and they fill a whole room full of these mouse traps caught and with a ping pong ball sitting on the top of one of them. And then they stand back out of the way and they throw one ping pong ball in the air and down onto some random loaded mouse trap. And bang, you see two, three, and then suddenly the whole room is awash with ping pong balls being shot everywhere. A chain reaction. And that's where we are in our knowledge, progressing so rapidly into the expanse of knowledge that we're doing it without consideration of the social implications of it. We're going in the interest of science without thinking about the long-term and short-term effects of it on the human culture.
What a great mind picture that creates, too. Interesting. Wow.
Here's another little mystery.
Yeah.
On picture 8 in my show page, it was submitted to me by another listener, John Thorlton, and he was going through Google Earth, one of my favorite pastimes as well, looking at things, and he sent me the latitude and longitude of something he found east of Roswell, about 65 miles. Roswell, New Mexico, the famous Roswell crash thing. And this is a piece of property. I found out who owned the property, but beyond that I can't get much about it. But if you look at that image and enlarge it, you'll see that you can go to the same address and start looking through various databases and try to figure out why this guy put this on his property. There's a huge circle, you know, that's like a road that went around the edge of whatever he was doing here. And in the middle of it, like a swastika with a cross through it. And then something like a submarine or something up at the top of it, an outline with strange pictograms like hieroglyphics that I've never seen before in a long rectangle. And then some circles, and then a circle with a square and an X in it. And this is in his property, you can see from the satellite. And with concentric circles, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4. I see at least 5 rings going out to the outer part of the property, which, you know, is, I don't know how many hectares it is, but anyway, it's a big property. So I'm putting that up there for you investigative guys out there. Go to that address and then start backtracking like I did and see if you can figure out what the heck this guy was doing on this property. You know, his swastika, I'm not even sure that it's turned the right way, but anyway, it might be backwards,
That's something.
Yeah, that's weird.
Well,
anyway,
I'll tell you what. Eric the tech, grab a phone. Let's give this guy a call. Let's get him on the air and find out what's up with that. Well, so what's your estimation in size? That would have to be enormous. I mean,
you know, I got it the other day. Let me just, I'll pull up the Google Earth while we're talking and get back to that address. But then I can tell you exactly how wide that big circle is. Have you looked at the main circle?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Which,
okay.
And that hieroglyphic thing up there is awful strange.
Yes. It looked like, I thought at the moment, it was like it was a cross section of a boat or a submarine. But,
right.
You know, so.
Hmm.
Okay. Well, it's not going to let me do that easy, is it? I'll do it in the background while we're talking. I can.
Well, yeah, and that's and for those people who are listening on Global Star or Blog Talk, this is an aerial picture of a parcel of land that I'm trying to figure out how to describe it. It's just kind of in the middle of nowhere, and then you've got these what would appear to be or what certainly. I would say are man-made structures, whatever they're made of. There's a circle with an X, or a circle with a box and an X inside the box. We'll say, if we're looking at this, at the, we'll say at the 9 o'clock position. And then kind of a somewhat of a swastika, perhaps.
Okay, here we go. Here we go. Yeah, keep talking if you want. I'm just going to measure the outer circle. The outer circle is half a mile, a little over half a mile in diameter.
All right.
And the cross feature you're looking at there, or the swastika thing, the bar going through it horizontally is nearly 2/10 of a mile in feet. That would be about 950 feet across. So they're not small, but they're not huge either. So, you know, and you can see around the area there are like swamp ponds or some of those black, dark green things you see in the lower right-hand corner of what I showed you. If you get onto Google Earth, you see
right.
that it's like swampy areas there. And the fact that it was so close to Roswell, you know, makes you wonder, was this a lark? You know, was it somebody that got the property and thought he'd have a bit of fun? I don't know. But anyway, I think it bears investigating just to put our minds to rest, you know. If you look at the big picture, I'll just interrupt here and say, with him as a center, with that property there as a center, about the same size swampland, you know, or swamp pond, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of those surrounding him and the 8th one in the middle. If you pull back on Google Earth and look at it, you know, and it's not huge mountainous area or anything like that. So I just have no idea, you know. And then you zoom out further, and you'll see a lot more of these swamps out in areas where they've done gas and oil drilling, but not on this property. So I don't know. Anyway,
Karen Rogers wants to, and I think I'm okay with using her name. She's well known to the program. Great writer, as a matter of fact. She said, tell Stan it's 33 degrees. Is that?
It is 33, 12, 19, 11, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, we have so much information floating out there in this great growing mammoth library we're building in the world that it's a matter of correlating numbers, patterns, names across all kinds of books and writings and, you know, carvings and stone and stuff like that. And it takes a lot of us working on this to try to pull things together that don't normally fit together and say, ah, are they connected? And so this is, yeah.
It's just one of those things that, you know, that kind of make you wonder. And it may be nothing. It may be just it may be designed just to do what we're doing here. Just, what is this?
Yeah. Image number 10 on the Show Me's page. It's called Teshub, who is a Neo-Hittite storm god. But many scholars, and I'm going to put myself in that particular category because of the research, but many scholars say they think that this Teshub fella was the Greek legendary Poseidon. And if you click on the picture I've got there, it's like of the huge carved stone. It's in a museum in Turkey or somewhere, I forget now. But if you get that, you'll see that this Teshub god, the Poseidon-type character, is carrying a three-pronged trident. And yep. They say... Oh, and also in his upper left, right hand, and his right hand, it looks like the hammer of Thor, you know, that the Vikings said that the storm god had. And you'll see that this character, this godlike character to them, is standing on the top of an ox of the kind that we saw in Santorini, on the carvings in the palace there, that were people we think were part of the Atlantean culture. They had, you know, bull jumping, jump over the horns and bounce off his butt and do a flip, and that was your initiation into adulthood there. And so here is this Poseidon-looking character standing on the top of the bull. And it makes you wonder about the golden calf business in the Exodus story. But anyway.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, these are little pieces of things that if we get together and talk these things out and email each other, it starts to form a much more coherent picture of our ancient past and what we're about to experience again on the planet. Yeah.
Boy.
Wow.
Yes. And you're right about the explosion of knowledge. And isn't that something that, I mean, even a decade ago, we did not have the capabilities we do now to put all, connect the dots. At least not with everything that's online. And wow.
Oh, yeah.
In that image, if I can ask, what is that symbol at the top? Is that a representation of a phoenix or something? Or top, right above the... yeah.
Typically, it's a function. These things are functional. And the wings are a functional thing, meaning fly in the air. And the round part of it in the center might be brilliant light, the sun god. It might be a craft, but it was something that flew in the air and related to this god. And
okay,
that's all I can tell you. It's quite common, various forms, you know, in ancient architecture or stone carvings. When you have even the Hopi, you know, secret keepers in their stone carvings, when you have them showing a carving of a god with a trident in one hand, with two rivers, or like a joker's hat, you know, a jester's hat, coming out, two arches coming out of his cap for the two rivers with the two water sources that Poseidon allegedly tapped into on his capital island to hot and cold water. When you see down the left-hand side sash stars that represent the five pairs of twins he had, you know, the ten descendants, kings from Poseidon. You know, when that's found in the middle of the desert here in the United States, and I hope you had it for yonks, you got to know that there's all this is connected. It wasn't millions of years ago. It wasn't even tens of thousands of years ago. At most, all this that we're talking about from the Garden of Eden to now is 12,000 years. At most. You know, and that's debatable whether it's 6 or 10 or 12, but they're just, I know people probably don't grasp the importance of what I've found in finding Eden, the Garden of Eden, the travel path, the migration path, the bones, the DNA model that goes from Tanzania in the Garden of Eden there straight across into Saudi Arabia and into the rest of the world, and the importance of the fact that that was Atlantis, where the sons of God came down and took earth women and formed hybrid children. It's going to replay again. Saudi Arabia is the heart of this. And anyway, I get carried away when I think about it.
Well, no,
I
mean,
say at the moment.
Very compelling, and your lecture is on DVD. People can get that via standale.com, and they can
get my lecture on the Garden of Eden that way.
Yes.
I never finished one for the conference this year. You can get that from prophecywatchers.com.
Right. Okay. And yeah, I was referring to the Garden of Eden, but yes. Okay. So all right. Wow. Wow. Okay. Yeah, but it's fascinating to think about this. It really is. And Stan, I just I love it because it really stretches, at least in me, it stretches my mind. And you did a marvelous job of connecting the dots of all of this and looking back at our history. And I think you're right. Just what 10,000-12,000 at most years. But people will not understand. A lot of people won't take the time to understand exactly what you're referencing or what you're talking about. But it's so rich in history and so prevalent for today, or relevant for today.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's spooky. You know, when that the first chapter in this volume two of the Vindicator Scrolls is outline. Well, is detailing the factors that allowed me to compress the age of the universe down to much, 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 much less than traditional science says. This is extremely important that people understand what I'm basing my whole argument on, the pillars of my argument about the Earth expanding suddenly at one point in time, about the flood certainly did happen, you know, about the large asteroid impact that hit in the water just off the east coast of India before it was stretched up into the Himalayas, and how all the continents were together into one continent, with rivers in it. And that wasn't 100 million years ago. That was probably less than one, two, three, about less than about 4,000 years ago. Pangaea is not 100 million years old. It's about 4,000 years old, 4,500, somewhere in there. But it allows people to have the ammunition they need logically to find the truth in the Bible, relate those things to scientific discoveries, and once we correct that timeline, so many things fall into place that you're almost paralyzed with discovery. It's just huge.
Very well said, Stan. Yeah. Wow. It's tremendous. And I want to thank you for sharing your expertise as we close out the program tonight and even close out the year. What a year it's been. And, I know, are you going to be on vacation next week, or are you going to be able, health?
Well, barring any health issues, I will be available.
All right.
If you want to do the show next week, I don't know.
Yeah. We'd love it. And, okay, so we'll have one more show together, again, barring any health issues with you, and close out the year. But what a year it's been. It's been an amazing year indeed. Stan, we've reached the end of the program. Thank you so very much for your time, and thanks for sharing.
You bet, Doug. It's always been a pleasure, just like a fireside chat with you.
Indeed. All right, brother. We'll be
bye.
Talking soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Folks, that'll do it. We've reached the end of the program. Isn't Stan great? I mean, really, he's just a great guy and a great guest. Gravitas, isn't that right? He brings an element of class to our platform. Just in closing, I want to mention tonight, if you get a chance, I'll be making a brief appearance on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. Got to stay awake from that, right? And then tomorrow, folks, tomorrow, oh boy, we've got a great show for you. I'm not going to make sure you tune into the first hour tomorrow night. it's just going to be me, but I've got a specific investigative presentation for you the first hour. And then, of course, Pastor Langford in the third hour tomorrow. And then Friday, we got a treat for you. Friday, Robert Blevins. D.B. Cooper. You remember, remember that? Remember D.B. Cooper? 1971? $250,000 out the airplane? Robert Blevins. Going to talk to us about D.B. Cooper. That's going to be a tremendous show. Detective show for sure. Just want to wish everyone a very safe and safe evening tonight. When you hit your knees tonight, really thank God for your blessings. And I want to thank you for blessing us. On behalf of J.D., John Robertson, Eric the Tech, Jackie, Joe, myself, God bless. Stay safe.